Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to the Dr. Debra and Therapist Kelly Show, only on LA Talk Radio.
Hello, welcome. I'm Dr. Debra.
Hi, it's Therapist Kelly.
Kelly, happy anniversary.
Oh my God.
Show anniversary.
Holy crap. It's today. I cannot
believe
it.
For this week?
Yeah, it's this week. Happy anniversary, my love. Can you believe it? We never thought it would be this long. It's great.
No, we committed to like a year, and here we are. Because, hey, whoever's out there that keeps listening to us, thank you.
Exactly, my mom.
We appreciate you.
Right. It's great. How's your back?
You know, it's getting better, I have to say. I went to the chiropractor 4 times last week, I actually do better standing and walking. Uh-huh. Sleeping and sitting is the worst. So when I get up from this chair, I will be like, what is that? An angle.
Yeah, like,
you know,
a
it's
V.
Like 90 degree angle.
Oh.
To get up to 180 is 100 degrees.
So hard. I guess everything collapses or
it
something.
It does. And it's kind of like stuck there. It's just such a miserable feeling.
I'm so sorry.
But much better.
Like good.
Last week, I couldn't even make it into studio, as you know.
I was
propped up on the couch. But, you know, and I did a lot of walking this weekend because walking just does feel better. It's just like, I guess it kind of like massages the lower spine.
So makes sense.
Up to Moonstone Beach. Have you ever been there?
No.
Very close to Cambria.
Oh, cool.
And it is... It's one of those magical places. Like, when you get in there, the air, it's so crystal clear, the water, the coastline. It's just so stunning. You just walk for hours and hours.
So nice.
And we actually went up and saw Hearst Castle. We did a tour up there.
Oh, it's right up there. Yes.
Yeah, in San Simeon. So
that's cool.
It was really cool because I did one of the tours that I had never done, which was the upstairs tour where you got to see the suites. And do you know that he had a mistress for all the years that he was married?
Really?
It was the biggest scandal, and his wife knew about it. Too. She had her own bedroom in the castle. The wife wouldn't go to the castle.
No.
It's actually called a ranch. They don't like to call it a castle.
Uh-huh.
And she had her own quarters, her own bedroom.
Interesting.
34 years his senior.
Oh my God. Wait, crazy. The wife or the mistress?
The mistress.
Interesting.
The wife was 20 years his senior.
Oh,
junior. Did I
junior.
Say
junior?
Yeah,
I was like, he's going for the Cougars.
Sorry, his junior.
Yeah.
Crazy. Crazy story. Just shows you what money can do, right?
Yes.
You can buy anything you want.
Anything.
Anything. He didn't care. He did not care what anybody thought about anything.
Oh, my God. What a way to live.
That was really cool. How about you? You had the monster?
Yes. So I went to Great Wolf Lodge with the boys. Now, this is really funny. So my older son has a friend. And we went to Great Wolf Lodge with this friend for my older son's birthday. And
then
London, my younger son, wanted to bring that same friend, which was great for me because he's like our babysitter. I mean, he's 8 years old. He's so mature.
Wow.
I'll tell you what happened the next morning. The kids woke up and London and Remy were running around like wild beasts. And he looks at David and I and he says, "Whew, that's a lot of energy. I don't know how you two do it every day." I swear to God, we were like dying. Yes. So it was wonderful. Yes. I'm needing a breather of parenting at the moment.
You sending him on a little retreat away from you?
Yes.
Yes.
It's called Africa, and I'll see you in the next life. Definitely overwhelmed a little bit.
He might actually have more energy than all the lions on the safari.
Yes, pretty much, and scare them away. Well, the Halloween candy was not a help. I think he's detoxing from all the candy. It could be too, partially. So
I probably just added to the mix because I got him the Stomp Rocket on crack. I mean, it's got all these extra rockets
and
some cookies.
You're so sweet. Thank you.
One for each boy so that one doesn't say, "Hey, it's mine. It's mine."
You know it well. Exactly.
Oh, my goodness. Okay, so, but you made it. You're here.
I'm alive.
You're still laughing about it, so
yes,
that's good.
Exactly.
So I'm sure you were tearing your hair out, but it's better.
Right, exactly. No, the waterslide place was actually okay. He was great there, and I love waterslide, so that was awesome. It was sort of the aftermath, and my parents are here this week, and I think he just didn't want to go to school because they're here, so... So we'll push along.
There you go. And my Prowler report. Prowler's doing very well, the kitty. And I had to put them in the hands of 2 new caregivers this weekend. And these lovely ladies did great. One of them's
awesome.
Like 30-something. The other one's 21 and a student. And they just love these. The cats came out for them. Like,
that's
they'd never
so
met
cool.
them. Came out for them. And, you know, let them feed. And they were great.
That's so
I
good.
Felt
one for each.
No, I just, one wasn't available for the whole time we were gone, so I wanted to have a chance with both of them so that we can rotate them. And
oh, that's smart.
They're not always going to be available at the same time, so no, just one at a time while we're gone, but nice to have two. This housesitter.com thing, I tell you, it's great.
Oh.
I've gotten like 50 different responses.
Really?
And some from very interesting people, like from other countries that would love to take a visit out here.
Right, exactly.
And happily stay in your home, but that this is
a little bit,
yeah,
exactly.
You know?
Oh, wow, that's cool.
Yeah, and, awesome. And pretty reasonable.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, that's good.
So, all righty. Well, any more stories to tell, or should we launch
into I want to talk about last week's guest. I thought that was super interesting. So we had Maura Ahrens Mealy. I think I'm saying it right.
Yes, Mealy.
Mealy. And she's the author of Hiding in the Bathroom, An Introvert's Roadmap to Getting Out There When You'd Rather Stay Home.
Fascinating. Whole new perspective on introversion and extroversion. I've been like thinking about a lot of my clients now in couples where one's more the introvert and one's more the extrovert, and talking to them in a different language, and they're getting
They're getting it?
Yeah.
How are you doing that? Like, in which way?
Just
I'm
to
curious.
Say that, you know, like, we really need to normalize these differences. These are not, it's not that she's wrong and he's right or vice versa. It's like, this is, you know, how you fill up your cups.
Yes.
And how are you going to find the middle ground to compromise? Because the more you make each other out wanting to be the villain, then it's not going to work.
Exactly.
And it doesn't have to be a deal breaker, especially the way she was speaking about it, that, you know, you have compassion and understanding for it.
Yes.
It's not like an anomaly to be one or the other.
Right. Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. How about you?
Super interesting. Well, it just made me realize. Give me perspective on, I mean, I kind of knew, obviously, it was hard for introverts. It's a skill that they have to sort of acquire, and they have to sort of muster up, you know, in certain places. So I think I just thought about that and reinforced that idea that it just doesn't come easy. I think that that they can do it, but it's just not, it's not easy, and it's not their preference, but they'll do it. So that was kind of interesting.
Yeah, there's one piece we didn't get into enough, and maybe we'll talk to her again to have her back to explain this. Does social anxiety obviously can breed more introversion, or is somebody just by nature an introvert and then has social anxiety, or which, you know, the chicken or the egg kind of thing? Because I can see, boy, when she talked about the social media concept, right, for introverts, I never thought about how just painful that would be to have to be out there all the time, as people are basically out there all the time. Yeah.
So. Well, it's funny because she didn't sound like an introvert either. She really kind of sounded, you know,
very
extroverted,
seasoned.
And it was kind of interesting.
Absolutely. All right, well, without further ado, today we have Jennifer Irwin, the author of Address the Color of the Sky. A native New Yorker and captivating storyteller with a flair for embellishment, Jennifer Irwin currently resides in Los Angeles with two cats, a dog, and her boyfriend. After earning her BA in cinema from Denison University, she worked in advertising and marketing, raised three boys, and ultimately became a certified Pilates instructor. While she has written screenplays and short stories since her college days, Address the Color of the Sky is her first novel. Welcome, Jennifer.
Well, thank you for having me. I'm absolutely thrilled. I can't believe that I'm not in L.A.
On
the show. I happen to be on book tour, so I'm calling you from Fort Lauderdale. It's just kind of funny because I live in L.A.
That is really funny.
That is really fun. Are you enjoying your book tour?
I really am, and as you can hear, my voice is fairly raspy today because I'm getting to talk to so many interesting people, and I'm also staying with friends in various cities, which has been really nice. There's been an outpouring of support from friends and love, and they're and getting people to come to my book signings, and it's been amazing. It really has. And I'm meeting a lot of interesting people, and they're sharing a lot of their childhood stories with me, because my book kind of deals with that. So that's been really very interesting for me.
So for our listeners, and correct me if I'm wrong, so the book is basically about a woman who's entering rehab for sex addiction, correct?
Yes.
Okay.
That's correct.
And
it goes back and forth in time.
Oh, okay. So like present day to past and back and forth like that?
Yeah, it goes back and forth in time until it merges with present day in the very end of the book. And what happens is the character, a flawed female character, she does bad things. And at first you're a little taken aback by her. And once you see what happened in her life, Mm-hmm. You care about her and you root for her. Mm-hmm. And that sort of makes the story relatable because everybody has a childhood story of trauma of some kind or another.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Well,
and how that affects your life.
What inspired you to write it? Because I'm wondering if there's something underneath here that we need to get at here.
Okay, yeah. Well, of course, right? We all write about what we know.
Yes.
I started to write the book to heal from a divorce. I had been married 20 years, and I was going through a divorce. And I sort of stopped writing when I was raising my kids, and I decided that this might be a therapeutic way for me to get out my feelings. And as I continued to write, I'd been teaching Pilates and became very fascinated by the difference between the male-female sex drive, and talking to a lot of women because I taught private Pilates, and I got to hear a lot of stories and really get to know women. And it inspired me to delve a little deeper into the differences between men and women. And at the time, a lot of men were coming out as sex addicts.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, well, could a woman be a sex addict? And then I started doing research, and one thing led to another, and yeah. And then the book came.
And so what do you define as being the differences between, let's say, male sex addicts versus female sex addicts? How does it show up differently?
It's a lot less common.
Mm-hmm.
And it's very shame-filled addiction.
Yes.
There's a lot of remorse and there's a lot of shame. So I don't think women are as quick to come forward. A female sex addict's more considered like a slut.
Yes.
Rather than a sex addict. She's just loose. Whereas it becomes easier for a man, somebody to say, oh, he's just a sex addict. But for a woman, she's just loose. She's a slutty girl or whatever. So, it's just not as common for women to come forward. And any addiction is defined as it's causing you problems in your life, and there's a series of questions that you can answer through the Alcoholics Anonymous program.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I mean, I'm not an expert. I just did a lot of research for the book.
Mm-hmm. I think you're 100% right. I feel like it is when it comes to sexual addiction, I think there's almost still this like studliness, maybe even like for men, it's like, oh, you know, he's been with so many women, and a woman, it's like, oh, she's what a whore, you know, like that kind of,
right.
There's such a negative
connotation. It can be more a badge of honor for a man to been with a lot of women, but it's very shameful for a woman.
Yes. Right. I still think it's hard for women to...
And it's not really about sex, is what I found out. It's more about a desperation to be seen and heard and a need for attention.
Yes.
Once the person has sex, it's not the excitement's over. Mm-hmm. It's really the build-up to that moment that's more the addiction.
Which is true of pretty much of substances and all kinds of process and chemical mm-hmm. addictions. It is that buildup. It's that anticipation and that excitement about mm-hmm. just the whole process of getting it, if you
yes.
will.
Yeah, getting ready, texting, you know, getting the attention, mm-hmm. thinking about what you're going to wear or whatever. There's the routine. And then alcoholic, it's like buying the alcohol, like getting the highball out, the cubes, the sound of the ice. There's just a process to the addiction.
Mm.
That's more than just the act of sex.
Yeah, and I can relate because as a former bulimic of years past, I mean, that binge, the getting ready for the binge was a big part of the whole experience.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Like preparation. Mm-hmm. People. Kelly, have you worked with many addicts?
Yes.
Sex
mm-hmm.
addicts in particular?
A couple sex addicts, but mostly the drug and alcohol.
You know, they're really, they can be such a challenge in so many ways because the partner, if they want to stay with them, they don't understand that it wasn't personal. You know, it's just so hard because mm-hmm. sex is the one area where that kind of sexual jealousy is something that most of us have innately, and we can't really get over that.
Mm-hmm.
And it just feels so personal, even though it's really, it's like a split off part of the self that's running for something else. It has mm-hmm. nothing to do with their partner.
You know, it's interesting.
Right. And I kind of address that in the book, and that, first of all, a lot of people aren't sure it's a real addiction.
I was going to say that.
Many people don't believe it is. They believe it's just an excuse for someone that's a cheater.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
I personally believe it is a real addiction. I believe it can damage. And I do agree with you. It is difficult for the partner. There's more therapists that treat the partners that, than it is the sex addict, it seems like.
Yeah,
I could see that. Yeah. So I think we owe you a huge congratulations because we've heard you sold the film rights. So I would love to hear how how that came about. That's amazing.
Well, I think you probably know in Hollywood right now, the flawed female character is extremely hot. And I attribute a lot of that to Reese Witherspoon, who there was an article about her in the Wall Street Journal where she was saying that she wanted to see, she wanted media roles for women. She wanted to see flawed female characters in films, whether likable or unlikable. Mm-hmm. And she is an avid reader. She has a huge book club. Her book club actually follows me on Instagram.
Wow.
And she formed a production company and started buying film rights to books that she liked that had good female roles. And so I come out with this book that has this very meaty female role that's a flawed character, a flawed protagonist. And it's produced, film producers are now scrambling for these films, for these manuscripts. If you go to the Cannes Film Festival right now, it's all the large book publishers are there trying to peddle books.
Mm.
It's, film rights are just becoming more hot right now. So I rode that wave, and a female private money investor, a woman who's been investing in films but has not had her name on the masthead of a film, bought the film rights to my book.
Mm.
And her daughter is actually in the USC Master's School of Cinematic Arts right now.
Okay.
So the two of them are going to do the film together.
Oh, that's
amazing.
Awesome.
So cool.
Congratulations.
Yeah. And I, you know, I'm very, very excited about it. They just did a book to film adaptation on a smaller budget film that's going to be released soon. And I'm very excited. They're extremely creative. The film producer actually designed the book cover.
Oh, I love the book.
So she's just got a very good eye, and it's going to be an aesthetically beautiful film. I have no doubt about it.
Do you have any interest in being in it at all? Like cameos or...
Wait, what?
I said, do you have any interest in being in it? Like in a cameo or anything?
Oh, in being... Oh, me... And no. You know what I have an interest in? Writing it.
Right. Exactly.
I want to be on the... My literary agent told me that I have a talent for writing dialogue, and she said to me, you need to write the screenplay. Wow. So I have a few people that I've approached to collaborate on the screenplay.
That's great.
And I have pitched to write the screenplay, and I know I'm going to be on the screenwriting team.
Mm-hmm.
I'm very, very certain of that.
That's exciting.
And the story actually really spoke to the film producer. And she said it was the human condition of wanting to be seen and heard.
Yes.
It was a universal, relatable subject matter.
Mm-hmm.
And the character, the Prudence Aldrich, the protagonist, is just a very touching character because you can really feel the pain of her childhood and how that wove a web through her, how she chose a husband, how she chose guys to date, how she saw herself as a victim. And I address things that are bothering me. I have older boys, and date rapes in colleges are really bothering me.
Mm-hmm.
And I was able to use my book as an avenue to talk about that and address that, which was really exciting for me.
It's so timely. It's unbelievable.
So what do we think about Harvey Weinstein? Do you think that he's a sex addict or just a creep?
No, I don't think he's a sex addict. And actually... I checked into the rehab center that I used. Pia Melody founded the Meadows, and I used a lot of her processes and procedures in my book. And he's not a sex addict. He doesn't have remorse or regret.
Mm-hmm. Yes. But could he be a sex addict?
I think a lot of people, and I run through the Twitter feed that... Everyone's like, this is just, he ran to rehab for empathy, of probably to try and pretend he was a sex addict.
Yes.
He's not.
Yes.
How about Clinton?
And that's my opinion. I'm not an expert, but.
Yeah. What about Bill Clinton?
I I don't know. He probably is. He's an attention person.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And yet I don't feel like he shows remorse or shame.
It's so funny how different.
Shame is a big part of this addiction.
Uh-huh. Yes, it is.
Yeah.
True. Absolutely.
You're right. That is so interesting.
I don't see him saying, you know, I'm really sorry. And instead, the only recording that runs through my head is, I did not have sex with that woman. I just thought that's the only thing I can.
Yes. You know. But I'm wondering if politics and being in politics or being, you know, world famous makes people more prone to minimizing their actions or denying their actions mm-hmm. because of the risk of what they would lose in a public mm-hmm. forum. Like, we don't really give permission to public figures to be able to outwardly say, I really fucked up.
Right.
You know, that we look
like, and forgive them.
Yeah, yeah. Right. And I mean, it's just, it seems like it's, I don't know. I would have loved to have had him in my office at some point.
To really understand that.
No doubt. That would have been great. Yes.
But I almost think it's the opposite, that when you're a public figure, I feel like there's that sense of entitlement that, oh, well, I can mm-hmm. do it.
That's what I think
this.
Too.
Right. Yeah. But what if one didn't have that, if you took that away, mm-hmm. would there be more shame? I mean, obviously we can't answer that question,
but
I'm just curious about how much the public image itself uh-huh. sort of masks the shame and the remorse that might actually be there. I don't know. I mean, but I didn't talk to him personally.
Yeah. Right. It's so true.
Yeah. I mean, don't they have like people that help put those kinds of, there's publicists that plant these things so that there is a scandal uh-huh. so that person gets in the news again.
Right.
I mean, don't they say any publicity is good publicity?
Yes, exactly.
So, you know, I don't know. They have people that are helping them, you know, clean the messes up and professionals that plant the seeds. So,
yep. I don't know that
it's hard to know what, you know, yeah.
I don't know that any politician ever says anything that's authentic out of their own mouth.
Right.
I mean, I think everything is written.
I know, right?
So true.
It's really when we elect a president, we want to elect their speechwriter.
Right,
right.
Exactly.
So yes. Do we like the speechwriter? Yes. Then we'll elect you.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Exactly.
So I have a question, Jennifer.
What I'm finding on this book tour, a lot of people sharing that they've had endured childhood trauma.
Yes.
And women that have endured sexual assault.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things about that I found out when I was writing the book is that women who have been raped or date raped see themselves as a victim. And until they can get that, shed that, and heal from that, they have the percentages chance of them being date raped again double and triple.
Really?
Which is, yeah. So the whole victim thing of somebody that's had a rough childhood, and mm-hmm. You know that child abuse comes in many forms. It's not necessarily just sexual abuse, physical abuse, verbal abuse, psychological abuse, spiritual abuse. So it takes a toll on the person's self-esteem. And that just, how is someone supposed to know how to find a good partner or to date the right guy? And I became fascinated in why some women just pick the right husband and they're happy and they're married forever. And some women always date the wrong guy mm-hmm. and they stay too long. And then they go with another bad guy. And I just, I really wish I could solve that puzzle.
Yep.
What, you know, why do some women know and some women don't?
Mm-hmm.
And I think some women don't listen to their guts.
Yep.
Because we look back and go, you know, I kind of knew. You know what I mean? But we still do it.
Yes.
We still go for it. All that fascinates me.
I don't know if this is helpful or not, but I know when I was writing my book, Healing the Sensitive Heart, and I was doing the paradigm of victim to survivor to thriver, and victim being in mm-hmm. a maximum security prison, and a survivor still being in a minimum security prison because mm-hmm. you're not really thriving yet. You haven't really let go of your identity that way, that we really are magnets mm-hmm. where we recreate over and over again the very same ground, not because we want to have abuse, but because we hope for a different outcome.
Yes.
But somehow if we could get our abuser to cross
right.
over, then we're vindicated. It's like
right.
the bad boy that says,
and I do,
yeah.
That's so true. And that definitely comes up in my book. And I think from what I gather, kids that have had trauma in their childhood was robbed from them. So they're actually stunted in their maturity.
Yes. Mm-hmm. That I 100%
and
agree with.
They can't have mature relationships. They're not, their childhood was robbed from them.
Mm-hmm.
And Something that I found is that some rehabs have people carrying around babies because they weren't nurtured as children. Mm. And it's about nurturing your inner child.
Right.
Oh, and taking care of the little person inside you.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Wow.
We are speaking with Jennifer Irwin, who wrote a wonderful novel called A Dress the Color of the Sky, who's currently on book tour and taking time out of her busy schedule to speak with us today. Thank you so much. Okay, so
I'm thrilled.
Yeah, this is fascinating. So I love that you really took real life, genuine experience from people's stories and all that, and were able to create that in fiction form. Was it a difficult process to do, or what was that writing process like?
I had a lot of really great mentors along the way. I had, personally, my dad was a drug addict. My dad was married 4 times. My mom was married 3 times. And I had a moderately happy childhood. I had one solid parent, and then there was a lot of chaos around in the outskirts. And I know that my childhood took a toll on me, and I know that I could write about my childhood experiences firsthand. And what it was like to be the child of a drug addict. And my dad was 100% a sex addict. Mm. So, and on top of that, then when I was teaching Pilates, I loved talking to women and hearing about their lives. And so that became really interesting to me. And building the characters was a process of, I just would keep going back and rewriting. And I had literary agents telling me what to fix, which was great. Mm-hmm. At first, like I said, my book goes back and forth in time. I tried to write it in a timeline format to see if that would be better received. And the book was boring.
Yeah.
It just, when it goes back and forth in time, it creates empathy for this character.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's the cast of characters in rehab. So I could create different addicts and make up their childhood stories and what brought them there and how addicts heal in a recovery environment. And the conversations that they have in private are in the smoking area. That's where there's no one listening.
Mm-hmm.
And those are really poignant scenes in the book because you get to hear their real raw conversations.
Mm.
And I also found when people are in recovery, they encourage you not to have a relationship, but people fall in love in rehab a lot
because
you're so raw.
You're so vulnerable.
So I had to add one person having sex with somebody, and then my protagonist Prudence kisses someone. It's the slip-o because her addiction is men. Men are everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, no one could score a rock in there. No one could score alcohol in there, but her addiction's everywhere. So I thought to myself, I have to have her have a minor slip up. She's not perfect.
Mm-hmm.
So that was kind of, it was just, and then the love interest, that the guy falls in love with her because he thinks he's in love with her because that's what happens in rehab.
Right.
You get so close.
Well, I can definitely support that, having worked in the rehab world for about 5 years in Malibu, and boy, there was a lot of banging going on.
Yes.
Like every time you look, I had this one young lady, man, you just couldn't keep her off the boys.
Really?
She was so adorable, so charming, but she just wanted validation,
yeah.
And that was the only way that she felt that she would ever get
it.
Any kind of love or warmth.
Right,
and these guys totally used her.
Cross addicted, right? So she squelched one addiction, another one popped up.
Yeah,
right.
And none of these guys cared about her.
Right.
They just wanted to use her.
Yeah.
She had a great body, and she was fun and charming, but she was like a little girl who just wanted to be pet, It was sexual.
Aww,
and then
that's
she was,
so
it was terrible because she
sad.
Was always getting in trouble. Like,
right.
I couldn't, like, I was,
yeah.
still, I worked with her, and I'm like, please, come on, just say no for a week, please. Let's deal with that. But she just couldn't.
She couldn't do it.
So she was always in trouble, always going back in terms of, losing all of her privileges, not having this. And then you'd think that she'd learn her lesson. No, because
she'd
that need for attention and admiration.
And this is just so common in rehab. So
what about all female rehab?
That was kind of, I had to add that. I have one of the roommates, Prudence's roommate, ends up having sex when she's married. I mean, it's just, they're really a train wreck, and Prudence is like, why am I the only one with the females only sticker? Why don't they have one? But they didn't check in as sex addicts,
uh-huh.
So it's just And everyone in there gets another diagnosis. Hers is she's got body dysmorphia. She's got codependence. And codependence is another one that I think a lot of people have. Mm-hmm. And it goes undiagnosed.
Yes.
Absolutely. I want to know about the title of the book, how you came up with that, and what's the significance?
Yes, great question.
Okay. In the fairy tale Donkey Skin, it's a fairy tale basically about incest, because when the queen's on her deathbed, she tells her husband, the king, you can only marry someone fairer than me. Mm-hmm. And in his madness, he thinks that's his daughter, the princess. And the princess doesn't want to marry her dad, of course. So she goes to a fairy nymph, and the fairy says, have him make a dress the color of the sky. I'll never be able to do that. Mm. Have him make a dress the color of the moon and the sun. And what ultimately happens is he makes all these dresses that are just exactly what, you know, and she's at the point where she's going to have to marry him. And they have a donkey that litters gold. And he kills the donkey, and the fairy nymph says, this is the best day of your life, and wraps her in the donkey skin, and she flees unnoticed. And I love, and on the cover of my book, Prudence is sitting on the donkey skin. And the donkey skin in my book, I refer to as that coat we wear when we don't want people to really know who we are.
Yes.
And I think we all do that. Kind of what you were talking about, the introvert, extrovert.
Yes.
Well, wow. That's
if we go to a party, we don't want people to think, oh, that person's shy. So you force yourself not to be, so that you can make it, fake it till you make it. Mm-hmm. But the donkey skin is our disguise.
Mm. Got it. I didn't realize that she was sitting on a donkey
Me
skin.
Me neither. I didn't realize that either until you said that.
Wow.
Yeah, and I refer to that in the book. And the fairy tale is called Donkey Skin.
Right.
And so that's where I came up with the title, Dress the Color of the Sky. And of course, I don't graphically out. My book does not have a lot of gratuitous sex. I don't think it really has any. The sex is there for a reason. And
right.
Because she's an addict. Mm-hmm. And I put it in there very purposefully. It's definitely not 50 Shades of Grey.
Right.
And I was going to say then, you know, it's always different when you're reading a book and there's sex in it versus watching it on a screen, at least for me. It's different. How are you going to contend with producers who are going to want to make it sexier, if you will, and not really deal as much with the you know, the therapeutic
That's
component of this
mm-hmm.
and the, you know, the tragedy of it, to not make it where it's like, you know what I'm saying?
That's a good question. I had a big book launch event in LA, and the film producer was there. And one thing she described to me, that she wants to show Prudence the extreme sort of juxtaposing of her life, and that she's out turning tricks or like being with men for money and like trying to at the same time be a wife and mother and lead this sort of normal life. And she's going to do sort of scenes that are very extreme, where you see her out glamorous with some guy that she doesn't really know, and then cut to her waking up and, you know, her alarm going off, making breakfast for her son. So that's kind of the way I see it, mm-hmm. that she's going to be able to do it through visuals.
Mm-hmm.
Good.
Wow.
Yeah. That'll be great.
Yeah. But I really... While I was writing the book, Kelly Oxford tweeted her sexual assault story from when she was 16 and asked people to share theirs, and mm-hmm. millions of women tweeted. It was mind-blowing.
Wow.
And while there, here I am writing this book about someone that's had sexual assault, and I started realizing that there's so many women who have experienced this, but it's hard to talk about. It's hard to write about. And it's hard to write about in a way that you want to read it. And that really was my goal, that it would be a page turner, that you wouldn't be disgusted reading it, you would relate to it, that you would care about to this character, you would care for her, and you could relate to many stories in the book, things that happen. And then, of course, now hashtag Me Too.
Mm.
And for when Kelly Oxford tweeted, women were opening Twitter accounts it was, I went through the feed for a few hours one night until I just couldn't take it anymore. But I thought, this is really important. And I had advanced review copies sent out all over the world and a few book bloggers in India. And they even said, this is a tough subject. And I'm so glad you addressed it in such a beautiful way.
Oh, nice.
So I feel, you know, last night someone was sharing their childhood stories with me. And people just want to talk.
Yes.
And they want to be heard.
Mm-hmm.
And I want people to tell me.
Right.
I, you know, I had a tough childhood. And I know my man picker was broken as a result. Because I didn't know what a good man was. How would I know?
Yes. Of course. Unbelievable. So I have a question as far as who you see sort of playing this part. Like, if you could have your pick of which actress you see playing Prudence, who would that be?
Let's see. That's a question a lot of people ask me. And
yeah,
really, really, it's a very tough because I'm so close to the book and the story. I think Bradley Cooper would make a great Nick.
Okay.
And I know the producer would just die to get him to play that role because that character flipped. And that's kind of a cool thing for an actor to be able to be the hero and then turn a little bit like the villain. And I went to Denison. You saw that in my bio. Jennifer Garner went to Denison. She's got that very pure sort of side to her.
Yes.
And I would love to see her stretch and do a role like this. Kind of Nicole Kidman recently.
In
the series that I mean, honestly, that was so shocking to see her in that role, but yet so believable, and she did such a great job. And that kind of brought me, I don't know, Jennifer Garner just seems to me to be so, she's a believable mom and wife.
Yes.
And where she could fly under the radar.
I could so
and I think she's really beautiful, and she could just be sort of that sexual
yes.
person too.
Totally.
God, I so loved her in that movie, 13 Going on 30. Did you ever see that?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, she was so good in that. And the Ghost of Girlfriends.
So many actresses that would be great in the role. Mm-hmm. So the most important thing to the producer is that there's chemistry, and it has to be love and hate between the protagonist and antagonist.
Right.
If that's not there, it's going to fall flat.
Yeah.
Right. You have to have somebody, too, who's just so passionate about the character, right?
Yeah.
And somebody who can just, like, really relate.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. And, I mean, I'm really excited to see it on the big screen. And I'm not one of those writers where it has to follow exactly the book. I want the film to do well. I want the film to be successful and beautiful and the story to be, you know, sort of like the book, but you can't just, I mean, every reader is going to be disappointed at some point in a book to film adaptation, you know, I mean, it's just inevitable.
Right. That's always true, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I think a writer being super aggro as things have to be this can be a little annoying.
Right.
And I'm trying not to be that person. So
it's like the bridezilla at the wedding. It's like the writerzilla.
Writerzilla. I love it. Mm-hmm. So
I want to be invited to the red carpet.
There
I want to be the person
go.
They don't want around.
Yes. Right.
And you want to be invited to be a writer on something else, probably, right? Like the sequel.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. Well, she's asked me for the first writer she's on the next book. And I left the book hanging in the end.
Cool.
And I was at a party one night, and I was very, very torn about how to end the book. And one of my friends helped me with that.
Cool.
It's just been such a real collaboration, and I feel so blessed to have so much support. And I really, it's very grassroots, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So, and thank you for having me on the show, because this helps me so much to get the word out about my book.
Oh, we're so happy to have you. I have an actual completely different direction of a question for you, if you will. So you have raised three boys. How do they feel about you writing about a sex addict? Do they have any interesting questions?
Okay, that was a little bit tough.
Mm-hmm.
And it was really, on one hand, they're extremely proud of me, and they're my biggest fans. And one of my boys went through rehab while I was writing the book and lived in sober living for a year.
Oh, okay.
So he was an advisor to me on, on the language of recovery.
Wow.
And helped me a lot, which I was really, was very grateful for. And my youngest son was sort of like, I'm not reading the book, but I want to help you. Mm-hmm. And I remember cleaning his car out, and I saw my business cards in his car. and he's like, so-and-so's mom really wants to read your book. Literally 2 days ago, he texted, he just started college. And he's like, my English lit teacher really wants your book. So can you send her a copy?
And you say,
whether or not he's going to read it, he's proud of me.
Sure.
And he knows it's good.
But he
knows the story's really important.
Yes. Do your sons not understand, though, that you need to make a profit off this, to tell them you're not giving them free books? They need to go to Amazon or go to your bookstore.
They need to support you.
Well, you know, what's really weird is because the whole less than mentality that I'm still struggling with is hard for me to ask for money for something. Which goes back to the childhood.
Yes,
you know,
sure.
You're unworthy.
Right. You don't deserve it. Yeah.
But you know
right.
what? For such
and
a low
so
fee.
So that's, you know, that's still a little something I'm working on, that I'm okay to have someone purchase the book and pay for the book and my work. And, you know,
of course.
It's just weird. Mm-hmm. We're all works in progress, but that's definitely one of my things that's hard.
Well, I can say that for a book like this, the small investment someone would make into buying it and what it can do to them therapeutically and understanding and having greater empathy if it's not a character they relate to is well worth the price times 100.
Yeah, exactly.
Aw, thank you. Thank you. There's a scene in the book where the kids are sort of tortured with food, in which it's like, you're going to sit here all night. If you don't, you know, you can have it for breakfast. And the amount of people that have told me, that's me. I had that happen. We used to have to have Brussels sprouts for breakfast, you know.
Wow.
And I just crack up over that, you know.
Well, so relatable.
As you were saying that, I'm going, oh, my God, I remember several times I'd fall asleep at the kitchen table. My parents would make me eat everything off my plate, even though they made food that I couldn't stand. My mother knew I hated onions. She would purposely grill onions and put them in the hamburger and then make me eat it, and I would pick out every single one.
Yeah, and kids are so willful. I know, you know how willful kids are. You can't get them to do it.
No.
You can't force
them
to take a bite.
No.
And they'll just sit there all night.
Wait, what do they care?
You know? Exactly. They have nothing to lose.
I have them playing, you know, staring contests, breaking into the kind of uncontrolled laughter that kids do.
Yep.
And it's just a classic scene so many people can relate to.
Oh my God, that's great. How long did it take you to write the whole book?
I'm so embarrassed to tell you this. I would say it took me 5 years in total. But I stopped teaching Pilates about 2 years ago and really focused on the book. And I had a couple of manuscript requests for fulls from literary agents in New York, and one of them provided me a critique that was so perfect and gave me just what I needed to rewrite it so that it was what it is today. And I'm getting I have only fives on Amazon right now, and I have 4.79 on Goodreads. And that is incredibly high for a first time
novel.
Amazing.
Yes.
That's amazing.
And people are honest.
Why you'd be embarrassed to tell us that, because the length of time investment you put in it, it probably made it a better
Absolutely.
Story.
Well, I had this like thing where I kept asking myself, when am I going to know that it's finished? When am I going to ever have that feeling? I mean, how do writers know? And I would have these sort of like freak out sometimes. And it was the most amazing thing. I knew it was a day came and I said, it's ready. It was the weirdest thing. And it was so fun to like have that feeling. And I know the next book's going to come faster. And there's two kinds of writers, ones that plan the whole thing out and sort of do charts and have post-it notes. And then there's people like me that just write.
Mm-hmm.
And I know from my writing coach that you know certain seeds have to get planted. Try fail cycles, and if there's a problem with your book, it's upstream. It's, you know, the beginning, the first third is really critical. So there's a lot of things that I learned along the way that will help me with this next book. I'm just thrilled with how well it's being received, with the reviews that are coming in. I mean, I'm just, you know, it's absolutely beyond words for me.
That's so.
And now I hope wonderful. It sells. I just need, you know, yeah. I hope people go out and buy it.
Absolutely. Buy it, listeners. Buy it.
Exactly.
You guys are so cute.
Yes,
so sweet.
Jennifer Irwin.
But no, I mean, my kids, I don't think my kids are going to read it. I don't know. I know my oldest ordered it.
Uh-huh.
Because I saw it on Amazon coming through. I saw the order.
It's so cute.
And that was really sweet. Like, I thought that was really, you know, he could have asked me for a copy, but he wanted to pay for one.
Right.
I thought that was really cool.
So sweet.
Yeah. Aww. That feels good. Yes. Address the Color of the Sky. We are talking with Jennifer Irwin, and this is a novel about a woman who is being treated for sex addiction. What's the age of her character, by the way?
So there would be two actresses that would play the role because it goes back and forth in time. And it goes through her starting out at around 8 years old, 10 to all the way up through college. And then, okay. you know, she meets her husband and blah, blah, blah. But in rehab, she's in her early 40s.
Okay.
So she's definitely.
And she's got one son. Uh-huh. And there's something tragic happens to her with another child. So you see that this woman's been through a lot.
Yes.
It's painful. And she almost can't catch a break.
Mm-hmm.
But she's just a very endearing person. And I show her thoughts in italics because it's written by the first person. And you can start to see the evolution of her healing through her thoughts as well.
Right.
In rehab, you know, at first she's like, I think that guy needs a proper, you know what, you know, and then as time goes on in rehab, you see that she softens and the donkey skin comes off.
It's so nice. Wow. Unbelievable.
Very quickly, do you put love addiction and sex addiction in the same category, or would you call them different?
Well, it's really interesting. I had a woman, I've had a lot of female sex addicts write me private messages on Twitter, but I had a woman tell me, this book disgusts me. I don't have sex. I am an anti, and there's words for people that abstain. They're abstinent, sexually abstinent, or sexual anorexics.
Yes.
So I have Prudence and a couple of the female characters going to a Love and Sex Anonymous meeting in rehab. And, The leader is sort of like a portly, very homely woman. And in Prudence's head, she's like, who would, you know, have sex with that woman? You know, she was a sex addict. But yeah, they kind of put it together because it's addicting. One of the characters in rehab is in love with a married man and thinks that he's going to leave his wife. I mean, we all know how that turns out.
Yeah.
Very rarely does it work out, but it does at times. Sometimes it does. You know, I'm not saying it always doesn't, but but she was addicted to that relationship, and that's also part. It runs into that same, the need for that attention, and the she's thriving on that negativity.
Right. Oh my goodness, we are out of time. If you can believe that, Jennifer Irwin, who wrote the book Address the Color of the Sky.
I love talking. You guys are so amazing. I mean, you're both brilliant and accomplished writers, and I'm so happy that you asked me to be on the show.
Oh,
thank you so much,
and we love your authenticity, and oh my god, I'm so excited to see where this goes.
Yes.
And thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you, and I hope we get to meet each other sometime in LA.
Yes, I would love that.
That'd be great. Love that. Yes, and yeah, where can people get the book?
I would love it.
Amazon and any local bookstore also?
Barnes & Noble. Yeah, Barnes & Noble, Amazon, Books A Million, JenniferIrwinAuthor.com. You can see the links are there, but you can get it anywhere. Just punch in Address the Color of the Sky and it should be there. You'll see it.
Thank you so much.
And the ebook launches in 2 weeks.
Okay, cool. Awesome. Wow, so exciting.
All right, well, thank you so much.
Thank
it was
you.
Really fun. Thank you.
You.
Okay, bye-bye. All right, so next week we have Steve Kastner,
yes,
who wrote the book Careful, A User's Guide to Our Injury-Prone Minds.
Well,
that's
super
intriguing.
Yeah.
All right, have a great one.
Thank you.
Love y'all.
Bye-bye.
You're listening to the Dr. Deborah and Therapist Kelly Show, only on LA Talk Radio.